Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the first meeting of the PCAOB's Standing Advisory Group for 2011. Either the group is getting bigger, or I think we may have accommodated the group with a little bit extra elbow room. Hello at the other end of the table. We will certainly still be able to identify your 10 cards later on as you put them up when you take your turns to speak. So I think we do have a large room, but I think it'll still work effectively. The advisory group plays an extremely important role to the PCAOB in general, and certainly to my division, the Office of the Chief Auditor, as we develop our standard-setting agenda and our standards projects. And I just want to express my appreciation for that role that you play and the commitment you bring to coming to these meetings and the energy that you share at these meetings. In addition, as you know, typically now before each meeting, I've been reaching out and asking SAG members for topics that you think would be appropriate to discuss. And we really value that input, and I get messages from many of you as to important things we should be thinking about. And hopefully you'll see that over the course of this year, we've built those topics into our agenda. Today, we have the opportunity also to hear from our new board members and new chairman who are here at their first SAG meeting, and will shortly be turning to our new chairman to be making a statement. Let me just briefly take a look at some of the materials that you have in front of you, just so you know what we'll be working with today. Certainly you should have in your folder a copy of the agenda. I'll talk to that for just a moment or two. When I talk about the standard setting update, there's a couple of documents, the 2010 standard setting activities and the standard setting agenda that's in the folder. And then there are the various other briefing papers which had been sent out to you previously. I think you've had time to go through the materials, but just a brief overview of the agenda. As I mentioned, we'll go around the table in a couple of minutes, a traditional thing we do at the first meeting of the year, for everybody to introduce themselves. We have several new members of the SAG, and everybody can take an opportunity to say hello, tell us a little bit about who they are, and add whatever color you decide to the introduction. Then we'll hear from our chairman on an update on the PCAOB developments, Jim Doty. I'll give a standard setting update. After that, we have Larry Smith from the FASB here with us today. For the last couple of SAG meetings, we've been discussing the FASB-IASB convergence projects and the pace and volume and nature of change and the impact that it could have on auditing. And Larry has been agreeable to join us a couple of times, and so we'll hear from Larry after that. And Jay Hansen and Tony Lopez will join in that discussion as well. Over lunch, just for your information, Nancy Doty from our Office of General Counsel will give an update as ethics guidelines for SAG members. So that Nancy will be our informal luncheon speaker. This afternoon, we have Dave Landsuttle and Miles Everson joining us, and Lou Ferguson and Keith Wilson will lead the discussion as they have a project to update COSO. And as we all know, the COSO frameworks used by basically all companies in connection with their framework that they review their internal controls for Section 404 and 404 reporting. And we want to hear about the modernization of that framework and what impact that could have been to many preparers as they evaluate their framework in the future, and auditors as they evaluate those internal controls. We'll then turn to auditing disclosures. We all know disclosures play an ever-increasing role in the importance in financial statements. More and more qualitative disclosures are being added to financial statements. And as we talk about the changing accounting framework, many of the new standards that are being proposed depend to a large degree on the quality of the disclosures in connection with the new accounting standards. And we thought it would be a good time to take a look at the PCAOB's auditing standards, which have been updated substantially as part of the risk assessment suite of standards in connection with auditing disclosures. But we wanted to take that topic up and get your views on whether or not the standards that we have for auditing disclosures are appropriate or if more is needed. Dan Gelzer and Keith Wilson will lead that discussion. And then, as you all know, we've had several discussions around changing the auditor's report at this meeting in the past, at a recent meeting of the Investor Advisory Group, and at an open meeting of the board just a couple of days ago. Jennifer Rand will just take, and Steve Harris will just take a couple of minutes to introduce that topic. Jennifer will give a short summary of what we talked about at the March 22nd open board meeting. And then we'll really open it up to all of you to get your input on a number of questions we have regarding the changes in the auditor's reporting model. This would be really the last chance for the SAG to give us some input on that topic before our planned concept release on the auditor's report, which is planned for late June. So with that, that's a brief overview of our agenda for the day. I think it's busy, a lot to cover, and I appreciate everybody's involvement. At this time, I think it would be a good idea if we just did go around the table and take a moment or two to introduce ourselves. I should have said at the beginning, but I think I introduced myself last night. I'm Martin F. Bauman, the Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards at the PCAOB, and I'll move to my left. Oh, by the way, one other thing. These microphones, they work best if only one person has them light on at the time, so when you're finished speaking, if you can just turn it on to speak and off when you've completed. Thanks.
Greg Skates, also in the Office of the Chief Auditor at the PCAOB.
Tony Lopez, Deputy Chief Auditor.
Keith Wilson, Deputy Chief Auditor.
Steve Rafferty with BKD.
Gail Hansen, I recently changed jobs, and now I am the Chief Financial Officer of Aurora Healthcare, a $4 billion healthcare company in Wisconsin.
Wayne Collins, BDO in New York.
Dan Gelzer, PCAOB board member.
Kiko Harvey, Delta Airlines.
Lynn Turner, former SEC Chief Accountant and board member of a pension fund.
I'm Dan Slack, CEO of the Fire and Police Pension Association of Colorado.
I'm Bill Platt, the professional practice leader of Deloitte & Touche.
I'm Gary Kaber, Chief Accounting Officer of Xerox Corporation.
I'm Galen Hansen, a board member of the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, or NASBA, and also an audit partner with Earhart Keefe Steiner & Hotman in Colorado.
Larry Salva, Chief Accounting Officer at Comcast Corporation in Philadelphia.
Jay Hansen, PCAOB board member.
Lisa Lindsley, Director of Capital Strategies at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Mike Gallagher, Leader of the National Office, PwC.
Denny Beresford, I'm a faculty member at the University of Georgia and Audit Committee Chairman of three public and one private companies.
John White, I'm a corporate governance lawyer at Cravath, Swain & Moore in New York.
I'm Daryl Schubert. I'm a partner with Ernst & Young Professional Practice in Cleveland. I'm also the chair of the Auditing Standards Board.
Diana Hillier. I'm here as the deputy chair of the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board.
Brian Croteau from the SEC. I'm a deputy chief accountant in the Office of the Chief Accountant.
Larry Smith, FASB.
Bob Dacey, Chief Accountant at the U.S. Government Accountability Office.
Mike Auerbach with the Department of Labor.
Scott Sherwalter, Professional Practice, NC State University, and former retired partner, KPMG.
Joe Costello, University of Tennessee.
I'm Peggy Foran. I'm the Chief Governance Officer of Prudential Financial.
Lou Ferguson, I'm a PCAOB board member.
Neri Buxman, Chief Quality Officer for Standard & Poor's.
Kevin Riley, head of professional practice with Ernst & Young.
Steve Humza, director of internal audit, Legg Mason in Baltimore, Maryland.
Jim Cox, professor at Duke Law School, and I'm hoping to get some sleep after tonight's late-night West Coast game.
Jim Doty, PCAOB board chairman.
Jamie Miller, General Electric.
Jeff Mahoney, general counsel, Council of Institutional Investors.
Steve Harris, PCAOB board member.
I'm Barb Roper, director of investor protection for the Consumer Federation of America.
Sam Ranzillo with KPMG.
Arnie Hennish, chief accounting officer at Eli Lilly and Company.
Good morning. I'm Arch Archambault, partner with Grant Thornton.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Rand with the PCAOB. I'm deputy division director and deputy chief auditor in the office of the chief auditor.
Jessica Watts, I'm an associate chief auditor.
And Jessica is responsible for most of the administrative matters around getting the SAG meeting organized, so thank you, Jessica, for all of that. By the way, we also have Mary Hartman Morris on the phone. Mary, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, and we can almost hear you.
Go ahead. Thank you. Mary Hartman Morris, I'm an investment officer at CalPERS, and my apologies for not being here today.
Thank you, Mary.
Doug Carmichael. I teach at Baruch College in New York, and I'm a consultant.
Thank you, everybody. Just one other administrative matter. Our practice here, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, whenever anybody wants to speak, and we hope it's often, please just raise your card up on the edge, and we'll make note of it. And although we'll tend to call on people in the order in which the cards were placed, clearly if somebody's made a point and you think you've got a point that's exactly on target on that you'd like to make as well, any other kind of signal can also be recognized, and we'll try to keep the dialogue going. Sometimes if we just take them in order, somebody's got a point that's very relevant to the earlier conversation, waits till another 20 minutes down the line. So it's challenging to do that, but any kind of signal that you really want to follow on exactly with that point can also be helpful. So with that, I think we're ready to move on to the next item on the agenda, which would be an update on the PCOB developments and our chairman, Jim Doty. Jim?
Thank you, Marty. Good morning. Welcome to the March 2001 meeting of the Standing Advisory Group of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. I want to second Marty's remarks and thank all of you for taking the time to do this and to help us consider the pressing issues that are and the challenges that we have before us as a board. And we're all looking forward to hearing your views and to seeing participation in today's discussion. As Marty mentioned, since the group last met in October 2010, we've added three new board members. Jay Hansen, Lou Ferguson, and I all joined the board on the same day, February 1 of this year. And as Marty indicates, we thought it might be useful if we took a few minutes to update you on some of the things that we've been doing and to respond to questions you have about the board's work. I fully think that at the end of this, some of you, and if not many of you, will have some comments and questions for me and for board members. I'm going to touch on six areas, and I hope touch on and not belabor is going to be the theme. And I'm speaking only for myself, expressing my own views about these matters, and would invite you all to query other board members as the day goes on and query me at the end of this. First, outreach. Most recently, and earlier this week, the board held an open meeting to hear from the Office of the Chief Auditor on the results of the staff's outreach in our project to take a fresh look at the audit reporting model, the auditor's reporting model. The staff presented views and advice we had received over several months from numerous in-depth meetings with dozens of people using or preparing audit reports, including investors, auditors, preparers, audit committee members, researchers, and others. This outreach effort, especially in an early stage of a project of this significance, was unprecedented. It reflects a commitment to transparency, and I must say that among the many things that the new board members owe to the charter members departed and to the two incumbent members, Dan Gelzer and Steve Harris, have been a big help in focusing us on the help to the board and the help to the process of transparency. There was no concrete proposal to be voted on here. This was an opportunity for us to hear from many constituencies. We understand that some of the standing advisory group members attended or tuned into that webcast. We look forward to getting feedback today from members on both the usefulness of the format of the meeting as well as the subject matter and the details. Also last week, the investor advisory group held its second meeting. The group's first meeting was May 2010. Steve Harris has been a prime mover and an organizing force in this. We want to acknowledge his leadership. The group has been organized into some subgroups, some working groups. The first lessons learned from the financial crisis, global networks and audit firm governance, auditor's report on the role of the auditor. That's all part of a public archived webcast that's available on our website. The presenter's slides that were given to the board at the investor advisory meeting and other materials that were made available are on that website. We encourage everyone here who is interested in this subject, as you all will be, to take a look at that and to go back and review what the IAG presented. They were important issues, and we feel grateful as a board for the effort that went into it by Steve and by his committee members, his group members. There's also been a lot of work behind the scenes. I think it's, as there should be, all of our work has not been conducted in a forum or fora such as this. We have been working hard on standards, other rule proposals. Most of these are going to be covered in Marty's remarks later, and so we will wait for those, and I'm sure they will occasion lively discussion. A word or two about inspections. Let me start with that as one of the most important changes in the board. As you may know, earlier this month, Helen Munter became our Director of Registration and Inspections. Helen joined the PCAOB in 2004 as head of our San Mateo office. She's led one of our large firm practice inspections for several years. She has a proven track record at the PCAOB, having identified and addressed many of the highly complex and stubborn accounting and auditing issues that go with that territory. This is a critical time for PCAOB inspections. We've been identifying significant issues relating to the financial crisis. Valuation is much in our minds, valuation of complex financial instruments, the inappropriate use of substantive analytics, reliance on business processes, entity-level controls, where there may not have been adequate evaluation of whether those controls are appropriate. We're also finding new issues, and these issues may be a sign that our risk identification model is working better, and our own risk assessment is working better. We're hitting more targets. It's great to be better at hitting these targets, but clearly our long-term goal and our challenge is to reduce the number of hits and the number of targets. Some of you may have asked, and I think we have been asked, whether we have more findings today because we've changed our criteria for identifying deficiencies. And the answer to that is no. From its inception, the board inspection reports have identified in Part 1 those deficiencies that our inspectors consider to be of such significance that the firm failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence to support the opinion. That criteria remains in place. I would also say that Helen Munter is focusing on, the division is focusing on, and much attention is being paid to achieving consistency across the field of inspected firms in the way that deficiencies are identified, cited, characterized, and called to the attention of the firm. This is important, and we are not oblivious to the need to achieve consistency. The increase in deficiencies, of course, concerns all of us on the board. It concerns everyone at the PCAOB at the staff level, and I believe and hope that it concerns the firms as well. We are looking hard at trying to determine root cause of audit deficiencies. When we look for root causes, we're essentially talking about finding ways to improve audits going forward. And I believe that that is a process that is going to involve a two-way street. We're going to have good communication with the firms about what they do to correct deficiencies, and we're going to continue to be insistent on having the firms tell us and demonstrate to us that they're doing it. But so much for inspections. Let's go to say a word about international matters. We have approximately 900 non-U.S. firms that are registered with the PCAOB located outside the U.S. They are located in 84 jurisdictions. More than 250 of those firms are on what we call a triennial inspection. They audit fewer than 100 public companies. Some of the firms are massive. The firms are extremely large with thousands of professionals. Some of the companies they audit are enormous major companies that trade in our markets. We have conducted inspections in 35 of those jurisdictions. That leaves, of course, about 50 jurisdictions in which we have work to do. We are in ongoing discussions with a number of the firms to remediate and to upgrade quality control concerns. Many of the firms we inspect are members of one or more of the large global networks of firms. And clearly our ability to effectively enhance the audit process in those firms is facilitated by knowledge of the strength and the weaknesses and an understanding across the board of the major firms that they are members of. It's no secret we have been shut out of some fairly important jurisdictions. There are 70 firms in 24 jurisdictions, including in the EU, Switzerland, and China, for which inspection deadlines under the statute have been passed in 2010, and we can't get in and inspect those firms. We're working to reach an accord that will allow our inspectors into those jurisdictions, and that's one of our highest priorities as a board. In January, we concluded an agreement with the UK authorities. It's a very good deal for both the U.S. investors and the U.K. It is not mutual recognition. It is a true arrangement of joint inspection, and it will result in both the PCAOB going in and inspecting two of the large U.K. firms, U.K.-based firms, and some of the smaller firms, and that is underway. We think that the U.K. agreement should provide a format and an approach in many of these other jurisdictions, especially the EU and Switzerland. We hope to make progress on a joint inspection arrangement with China. That progress is slower, as you all know, and unfortunately the risks to investors are every bit as great, perhaps greater. Last week, the board issued a research note on Chinese reverse mergers. It was prepared by our Office of Research and Analysis. It provided context and detail to the issues that had been discussed generally in Staff Audit Practice Alert number 6 that had been issued in July of 2010. The significance and the impact, I think, of that research paper, is that it identifies a trend, the trend of small Chinese companies seeking access to our markets through reverse mergers, triple the number of IPOs conducted in the U.S. by companies from China in the period studied. The PCAOB registered accounting firms based in the United States, the firms that are based here that audit Chinese companies, audited 74%, a little over 74% of the Chinese reverse merger companies. The China-based registered firms, a little over 25%. So that leaves us with a denial of access through inspection to right around a quarter of the audits that are performed on Chinese companies that are accessing and trading in our markets. If Chinese companies, and I've said before, and I reiterate, if Chinese companies want to get U.S. capital for the long term, and if Chinese auditors want to garner the respect of U.S. investors and become major forces in international accounting, which I think we understand is their goal, they need the credibility that comes from being part of a joint inspection program that is international and that includes U.S. and other similarly constituted regulatory regimes. And so we believe, something to offer China in this regard, and I think we're going to be pursuing that in the near future, and you'll hear more about the techniques that we will do, that we'll be using for that purpose. I should mention that we're well along with arrangements to implement new authority under the Dodd-Frank legislation to share the results of inspections with foreign counterpart regulatory agencies, subject always to appropriate confidentiality and limitations on the passing on of that information. It's very carefully monitored by our Office of International Affairs and our Division of Inspections, but it is going forward, and it should help us open up some of these markets. We hope to have some new announcements for you very soon about where we can now inspect. A word about enforcement. Since the last meeting of this group in October 2010, we announced the settlement and institution of two enforcement proceedings. One was the censure of a large firm manager. The other was a revocation of registration and a bar of an accounting firm and its principal. Those settlements, as you know, don't reflect the full scope of the enforcement work. The Division of Enforcement and Investigations continues to be engaged in substantial litigation, particularly in cases relating to some of the largest international registered firms. Earlier this month, we instituted a proceeding against a large firm and several partners, and that litigation is ongoing. And, of course, we do not talk about that. In order to have publicity of any of that, the board must find that there's a good cause for publicity. There has to be a finding of a reason for the publicity, and the parties have to consent to the public proceedings. That secrecy or that veil that shields the institution and the conduct of litigation has been the subject of substantial comment. It has a variety of consequences that are unfortunate. Interested parties are kept in the dark. As an example, in a recently announced case, the Gately case, the firm had issued 29 additional audit reports on public company financial statements between the commencement of the action and the public disclosure of the charges. So there's a period of time in which people who should not be in the auditing business are out rapidly accumulating clientele and issuing audit reports under essentially a closure protection from publicity. We should not wait for Congress to take this up. To this end, I intend to give some careful attention to the tools that the board needs to be effective in enforcing quality audits, but also identifying some other tools that other regulators have and have been used in the past and can be used, I think, responsibly by this board to maintain public confidence in the enforcement process. Oversight of broker-dealer auditors. Dodd-Frank expands our authority and our obligations, our duties, to include the auditors of broker-dealers. And they had previously been required to register with us in some cases, but until now they wouldn't have been subject to any inspection or oversight or enforcement authority. And that legislation will have a significant incremental effect on the work we do. Since the last meeting, the board has sought public comment on proposed rules to establish an interim inspection program, as well as to implement the Dodd-Frank provisions on funding. The purpose of that interim inspection program is to inform the PCAOB's development of a permanent program. So it's not a pilot program. It's not temporary, but it is an interim program, and we intend to use it to assess compliance with relevant laws and standards in broker-dealer auditors, broker-dealer audits. We intend to use it to form our judgments about what the appropriate ambit of exemption should be. We have exemptive authority under this statute, so we will be using it to determine where those exemptions should be carved out and how they should be expressed. And that will, of course, also reflect what we find about whether broker-dealers who are merely introducing broker-dealers and should not be holding customer funds and customer assets are, in fact, complying with that rule. This is a rule, of course, that is mainly about the safekeeping and the custody of client assets, and that's where our efforts will go. There are also standards and attestation standards that have to dovetail with the SEC's own rulemaking under 1785, and Marty will be talking about some of the intricacies of that later. Continuing issues related to the economic crisis. In December 2010, we published a staff audit practice alert going to what we saw and were finding in these areas. I know that some of you have not been hesitant to express your view about that to us. We encourage you to continue to do that. We will be continuing to look at the economic crisis and the particular phenomena that seem to lie behind that. And we are formulating internally the best way, the most efficient way of going about carrying forward an analysis, an investigation and analysis of what audit issues lie behind the economic crisis. With that, I think I will stop and express my gratitude to the chief auditor for doing this, for forming this group, and for attracting the kind of brain power that we have here and the kind of stature the group represents, and say that I'll be happy to respond to any questions or comments you may have that Marty gives you time for. Marty will recognize, of course.
The floor is open.
Jeff? Jeff Mahoney? I can't believe you don't have your card up. Yeah. I'm calling on Jeff Mahoney because I know he has questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if you could expand upon remarks you made recently to the Securities and Exchange Commission Historical Society, where you touched on two significant accounting issues that will likely continue to have an impact on the auditing profession, fair value accounting and international financial reporting standards. With respect to IFRS, you indicated that the SEC cannot or require all companies to adopt IFRS while there are multiple versions of IFRS being used around the world. With respect to fair value accounting, you commented favorably on SEC Chairman Breeden's belief that fair value accounting promotes transparency and that the volatility that results from fair value accounting is better than the potential for serious misunderstandings and misstatements that occur with amortized cost accounting. As chairman of the PCOB, what would you like to see happen in these two areas, and how do you see these two issues impacting the work of the PCOB going forward?
I won't characterize that as a low blow. I will only qualify it by saying that those remarks were about a long ago period, and they were delivered before I had the benefit of the kind of intensive work with the PCAOB staff, which I've since had, and the commission staff. First, I've said I don't think that for auditing concerns, the concerns we have and the jurisdiction we administer, I don't believe that convergence per se should be a dominant goal. I think we have to move a step at a time and be sure that as we move from rock to rock, we have a firm foundation for what we know and what we're doing. I believe that it is certainly our intention, and it would be our duty to work carefully and closely with the FASB and the SEC to remain alive to their evaluation and their conclusions in the area of international financial reporting standards, and to be sure that our activities are synchronous with that they complement and they work. That our standards and the projects we're undertaking, the things we're doing, work given where the FASB and the SEC are moving. I think we will have substantial input. I think FASB and the SEC have both indicated that they are hungry for the knowledge that comes out of our inspection. And Mike Starr, the deputy chief accountant, Brian's colleague, has introduced a financial reporting series that will happen. And FASB and the SEC and the PCAOB will all be there. We will take up these issues of valuation. There will be a forum such as this. So, again, I think transparency is going to show how we're moving and how fast we're moving. I did read, before I had any idea of being here, the report, the interim report of the SEC on the work they had done on IFRS. I thought it was very informative. I'm looking forward to the next one, which I believe is imminent. That will tell us how far along they are in that area. So I think, to put it bluntly, I think IFRS constitutes a challenge for everyone, certainly a challenge for the audit profession here, certainly a challenge for the regulator of auditors. And we intend to be nimble and alert and to know what we're doing when we do it. Volatility, market value accounting. Volatility is, I think, still with us. Many of the things that we are looking at, I think, in our accounting standards as well as in our auditing standards will of course, be complicit in volatility. I do not believe that volatility is something that can or should be covered up or smoothed or avoided by accounting or auditing techniques. So we don't have as much to do with this, the accounting side, but I'm not a fan of the idea that we don't want to know the facts. I think we have to know the facts and understand what the facts mean in some kind of context. Is that responsive?
Thank you. Barbara Roper?
There are no trick questions in my... I wanted to make a quick comment on a couple of points. First, I want to congratulate you for the strong statements you made both on the foreign inspections and the enforcement transparency, building on the foundation that Dan laid during his interim chairmanship. Those are issues of very high priority for us, and I'm encouraged that you're moving forward on that. As you know, I'm a strong proponent of this issue of needing to do an evaluation of the audit issues behind the financial crisis. And I would just reiterate what you've heard from me before, which I would encourage that to move forward as quickly as possible and as comprehensively as possible for one reason related to an issue we're going to be studying today, which is that one of the things I think you are likely to find and have already found in some of the PCAOB's analysis in this area is that the problems increase as we look at auditing functions that are more subjective, based more on judgment, more qualitative rather than quantitative. And since many of the accounting standards that we're looking at in the report today seem to be moving more in that direction, I think we've already had a massive failure, in my view, of the audits of financial institutions, and we're moving toward a system that looks to me to be becoming a lot less auditable. So I would just encourage that analysis, both to look back and to look at its implications for how we're moving forward in some of these areas.
You may have put yourself on the same page with some of the members of the audit profession here present, but let me say on the financial crisis and the statements which you all made at the IAG, it is, I think, a pleasant surprise when board members come up with creative ideas that can be examined and implemented by the board and the staff. And I think Lewis Ferguson has begun a process of reflecting on how we might best continue to think about this question of what caused or what contributed or what may have been involved on the audit side in a way that would make it both efficient and useful to do it, and that'll go forward. And I think at some point, when Mr. Ferguson's ideas have been vetted and discussed, you'll hear about it.
Denny Beresford?
Jim, I'd like to congratulate you on the step of having the public meeting on the auditor's report, and I think, as you said, certainly it improves communications. Use the word transparency. Obviously, that's true as well. But it's really just kind of a baby first step, and having spent 10 and a half years at the FASB in that very transparent world, I think that the PCAOB should very seriously consider moving more and more, not necessarily to a full FASB type approach, but up until now, it's been very hard for constituents to understand what is happening on many of these projects. We get a little bit of feedback through this meeting and through speeches and so forth, but for the most part, projects kind of disappear for months or even years at a time, and you don't get as much feedback, perhaps in some cases, on things because of that. And I really think the whole process would improve if there was more transparency, if there was more openness, if there was more public debate of the activity, and I just encourage much more of that going forward.
Well, thank you. And Marty's going to talk about these projects that we have on the drawing board, the standard projects. I think none of us foresee any of that going forward without the same kind of extended process that we started on the audit report.
John White. First, let me echo Danny's remarks. I certainly endorse the transparency initiative that you was evident in the meeting on Tuesday. I thought it was terrific. I have to say, particularly for those of us who are not in Washington, the opportunity to feel like we're part of this is really a very useful direction. One thing I thought maybe you could comment on a little bit, many of the issues that the board faces today, and I guess I'm thinking among others, the auditing report, the auditor's reporting model, intersect a great deal with the SEC and with FASB. And obviously the SEC and FASB are particularly busy these days with Dodd-Frank and IFRS and convergence and a variety of other things. And I thought maybe, Jim, if you could comment just a little bit on how you see your interaction with both of them and kind of your outreach and how you're looking at all that.
Fair enough. We have a very close working relationship with the Chief Accountant's Office at the SEC. I think Jim Croker and Mike Starr and Brian Crotto and the other members of that staff have been very helpful to us. They've been available to us. They've encouraged us to speak with them. They were extremely helpful in getting the China reverse merger paper ready and accurate and ready to go. And I would expect that we will continue to try to be sure they know in advance where some of these initiatives might go, so that when they are exposed at a very preliminary and open meeting staged as the audited report was, the audit reporting model was before the concept release or at the time of a concept release, I think they will have heard about this. And the same is true of FASB. There have been discussions, conversations with the FASB, and we have insights we believe that the auditing side brings to the existing projects that are imminent, and those will be matters that we discuss with them. So I think we're going to avail ourselves of the accessibility of both groups and to be sure that we don't do things that are going to eat up time for them that are simply wasters of time for them.
I might comment that I think it's happened since we were all last together, but this new delegation of authority at the SEC mm-hmm. to Brian mm-hmm. and his colleagues to, I guess, sign off on mm-hmm. FASB standards, at least in my viewpoint, is a tremendous step forward.
Fortunately, they have regulated us with a light touch. The delegated authority has been used, I thought, very constructively and very well, and it's been a great help to us at the board.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John. Galen Hansen?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the audit report broadcast, webcast on Tuesday, as was. Thank you. I think that's long overdue that we're starting to see that movement. Also wanted to just sort of comment on the Chinese reverse merger research note. I thought that was absolutely terrific. I was, I don't want to reveal my nerdiness here, but being mesmerized by what was in that paper. And it was the type of thing that I think is very practical and very useful, not only the profession as a regulator, PCAOB, putting people on notice that the PCAOB is monitoring and looking at these things and considering and weighing the risks and the pitfalls of what's going on in an area that is rapidly becoming an opportunity for abuse. I guess my question for you, Jim, is do you see other sorts of information like that research note on other topics coming forward in the future?
Yes. the Office of Research and Analysis, I think, is exemplary in relating its research tools, its research capacity, its data collection to the actual mission of the board. So we are very fortunate in that the staff we have in AURA is reading what is going on in the board and in the accounting arena generally, and they are thinking of areas where their research can be employed to flesh out and to give substance and context and force to the issues that we're trying to get out there for the public. So I'm quite impressed that they do not regard their research as abstract. They regard it as and their research tools as abstract, but instead as related to the process of making this the inspection and the enforcement process more efficient, and to inform the audit standard process.